All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Money Mitch Effect. Mitch Michaels here. The sports podcast rolls along into what I think is really the best week, best 2 weeks of the sports year. NHL, NBA playoffs, we're fresh off the Masters, and of course the NFL draft coming up, as well as the start of baseball season, some other stuff too. Joining me now to talk NFL draft 2024, my guy Brendan Smith. Brendan, I know this is your time to shine. It doesn't get any better than the draft for you. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, man. This is, I am not kidding at all, my favorite event of the year and of the sports calendar. And it's going to be a blast, man, to see where these guys fit and where they end up getting picked and projecting how they'll do in the league.
Yeah, and we were talking before we started, but I definitely think that going first round on its own on Thursday is great because you have the Thursday night draft. You get the big prospects out. You still have the stuff for the football nerds like us over the weekend, but isolating the first round, really making it a show was good. And now we're getting used to just having, the first round on Thursday nights and really not knowing what to expect in a lot of cases still.
Yeah, exactly, man. And it's a fun, like, you get the glitz and glamour that first night. I went to the Vegas draft a couple of years ago in person, and that energy is just electric with how they've taken it to the different cities, and they're outside and they've got a huge crowd, and it's fun to anticipate each of those picks. And then you still get the football nerd side on Friday and Saturday, where that board kind of resets Thursday night into Friday morning, and that 33rd pick almost becomes another first round pick with how much action there is there. And yeah, it's a blast, man. It's a great format and a good class. So,
yeah, I had a little intel into the draft in Cleveland a couple years ago. My brother's friend growing up who got recognized as a high school football coach of the year got to announce one of the Browns picks, and it's very last minute. You're just waiting in the green room. Okay, here's the card. Picks in. Let's go. And for him, already dealing with nerves, it was Owosu Koromoa, so not the easiest name to stay on draft night in front of, the national audience.
Right. Man, that's the dream. I'd love to do that. That's awesome.
I was thinking, too, best draft moments that I can remember as a kid growing up. The one that sticks to mind is when the Vikings just let the clock run out and then everyone ran up. And, that's the one that, for some reason, just sticks out. Also in a weird position for me, too, Brennan, because, I don't want to get into the nuances of that Watson contract and everything, but the Browns not having a draft pick, especially being a little better too, not being in the top five in the last couple of years, is a little different for me.
Yeah, you got me talking, man. Since the Rams haven't made a first round pick since 2016,
is this so it? Is this the year?
Fully aware.
Is this the year?
I don't know, man. It's you can never quite tell with Les Snead. He's wheeling and dealing all the time, and Obviously, just got to maximize the last little bit of the Stafford window. It's going to be exciting to see how they move, if they move up and make a big splash, if they move down. It's keep the streak going, or are we going to break the streak?
So I wanted to ask you this to start out. A lot of ways to go, and it's quarterback-driven and quarterback-centric every year, obviously. But in your opinion, just the overview, and then we can kind of go forward and backwards from there. But where's the point this year where the draft really takes off, where it gets interesting? Some would say pick three. Some might say higher or lower. Where are you on that question?
I think I'm a little bit lower. I think by all accounts and with the interest in the three quarterbacks at the top of this draft and how they match up with need, more importantly, for the three teams that are at the top of the draft, it really feels like four is where it begins. And, what's the value on J.J. McCarthy versus the Cardinals taking a stud like Marvin Harrison or Malik Nabers and getting another wideout target for Kyler Murray. I think that's kind of where the intrigue begins. And does McCarthy move into that top four, and is he valued like that, or does the board start to fall a little bit differently? And it's going to be fascinating, man, just to set the scene. There's so much offensive talent at the top of this draft that you can look at it and assume at least there's a chance that there might not be a defensive player picked in the top 10 picks, which it's never happened before. And that's kind of crazy to think about, but there's so much to these quarterbacks and the wide receivers and a couple offensive linemen and Brock Bowers as well, that maybe we get to that 10th pick and there might not be a defensive player off the board. So it's shaping up to be a real offensive heavy first round and a really offensive heavy top 10.
So, yeah, and I think there's a lot of ways to go with this. One being just getting it out of the way that Caleb and Jaden, right, they seem like locks for 1-2. There's not really going to be any surprises there. The Patriots, and this is where we get into smokescreen season, what's happening with 3? Do they really want to move down? Are they desperate? Do they, you know, like somebody and they're just trying to get the scent off? I'm still in the camp that you can obviously make question marks for all these prospects. Quarterback, as we know, Brennan, is so important. Nothing's a guarantee, but if you have that guy on that rookie contract, it's so valuable. That said, I mean, I'm still looking at it, and I'm not even being the biased Ohio State fan here. McCarthy's entrance into that next tier has kind of been a little shocking to me that he's talked about in the level of a Drake May. When you get to a position like Arizona at 4, you know, and who's to say the Patriots don't pull a fastball and say we don't like any of these guys and go Marvin Harrison, but I still don't know how Arizona would pass on, and I think they like Marvin over Neighbors, which obviously I would agree with, but that seems like what they should go is get a playmaker, give Kyler another chance to succeed, he's at full health, and build up from there. I think McCarthy and the trade prospects we can get to in a little bit, the trade partners that could get him, I'm just not sure I see him going that high.
Right, and that's the, I mean, just to start on kind of the Patriots, and is that's such a fascinating angle of this draft, because for literally 2 decades, it was the Bill Belichick show. Mm-hmm. And now Jerod Mayo takes over. So how does that change their approach to this draft? Is it a, let's go out and get a premier talent like Marvin Harrison Jr., or you have an older owner who's used to a lot of success?
Well, that's perfect, because exactly. A young coach thinking that you're building up, you have plenty of time, let's just take our time with this, or does an older owner that I think it's fair to say, right, is proven to kind of meddle a little bit, get involved in there. You know, that's such a huge conflict. Then yeah, that could be one where, you know, hey, owner's going to win. They signed the checks, right? Like they're going to win out.
Exactly. And that's something that, you know, you have to at least factor in to, is May the guy because he's the guy, or is May the guy because there's a sense of urgency there to get back into that contention? That franchise tasted a lot of success. And the quickest way back to success is exactly as you said, getting a quarterback who's good on a rookie deal that you can load up the talent around.
And
the Cardinals, I'm with you. I if I were them and I was sitting there with my choice between Neighbors and Harrison Jr., it's really difficult to imagine, unless it's a Godfather offer, to move down, because that team needs talent. It needs talent almost across the board, but especially in the pass catcher department, where there's the cupboard is a little bit bare in the desert. And they're exactly at that juncture where you're trying to figure out what the future is with Kyler, and getting him one of those guys, you'll find out really quickly. That pairing is going to give you a glimpse into what the future of the Cardinals can be versus moving down and accruing some picks. And there's great receivers that you can take throughout this draft, but not compared to those two guys. They're in their own class, and Rome Odunze maybe a little bit lower than that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm on board to just sit and pick.
Well, I want to just also say, I know May was uneven in North Carolina, but I think he has the ability to blow up, and there's a realistic possibility he ends up being a better pro than Jane Daniels, who, Jane Daniels is an interesting one, right? We've seen this before, and there's been times where it's worked out. Burrow's the obvious example, not just because of the LSU side, but just having that monster year, vaulting yourself up into the top picks and then becoming a great pro. Also, we've seen that it can be flash in the pan. So May is the third option. If they like him, I get that. And I would also just say, Brennan, that I've seen a lot of great Ohio State players. Marvin might have been the best one to come through in my lifetime. He's in that discussion. So yeah, sometimes you just don't need to overthink this. A team that needs playmakers would be perfect there. And then I think, look, I mean, you talk about smoke screens. I mean, the Chargers and their new coach. I think Alt, the lineman, is going to be the pick here because of who Harbaugh is. And I think knowing that, I think whatever he says is just a giant smoke screen, because Harbaugh builds big physical teams. That's what he's done at every level where he succeeded. I would be shocked if they didn't go lineman, presumably Alt at 5.
I completely agree, and all you have to do is watch the national championship and see that team was built from the inside out into the dominant force that they were in college football. And he's going to want to do the same thing and protect Herbert, who, you know, last year he got beat up. And as far as prospects in this draft go, I don't think there's anything more of a slam dunk than Joe Walt. I mean, he's got everything you want. He's got the frame. He's got the technique. He's got the weight. He's got the anchor. He's got everything to be a blindside left tackle for 15 years. And that's as much of a safe pick as you can make. And it fits exactly with the DNA of that Harbaugh.
It's going to be a good one, because that's where I think, you know, you can make a case too. I mean, we've made the case for earlier, but you could really make the case, Brennan, that the draft picks up at number six with the Giants, because that's one where that is not a sure thing across the board. And I know Neighbors is a landing spot there. There's lineman talk. If a quarterback falls, I think that's, you know, realistically, the Giants could say and have their plans. But I think there's a contingency for if one of the top three falls. That said, how do you see it shaking out with the G-men at number six?
Yeah, man, that's exactly the biggest spot of intrigue for me right now, too, because the Danny Dimes era looks like it's on its last legs in New York. Mm-hmm. And you look around, and if Adunze is there, that seems like a slam dunk to me. He might be, and actually probably is, my favorite player in this draft, just the way he plays and attacks the ball. And
so even if Neighbors is still there, you'd go Adunze there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, like, just in terms of long speed, there's nobody that can touch Neighbors. Right. He just has a different gear when he has the ball in his hands. But in terms of guys who just can go out and just, you know, bully people and play with that physicality at receivers, the Giants lack in an NFC East that has that physicality. Mm-hmm. They need somebody who's going to go out and attack the ball like that, whoever the quarterback is. And that's the interesting, like, that strategy is sort of, are you going to take a quarterback and kind of prepare for that next era, or do you accrue talent and then get the quarterback next year or in free agency or the draft? And the same thing, their offensive line could use some help too. And there's guys there, you know, Troy Fatana, who I love, he can play all five positions on the offensive line. Do you just get that help and try to get Jones back on schedule for what you think he can be? But it's looking around their division. The Eagles are the Eagles. The Cowboys have a lot of talent. Washington's on their way up. They've built a good talent pool. And if you're the Giants, what's the timeline? Is it to wait it out a little bit where, you know, they've got to pay Dak in Dallas and they've got some players they've paid in Philly and try to wait out kind of the front end of those deals and see how it is in a year or two? Or do you go all in on another quarterback? And I think that really depends on how the top three guys go and then how they value McCarthy as a piece in that offense.
Well, that's the interesting spot. And to kind of parlay this, I think you look at the next couple picks, Brennan, you look at what's out there. I mean, Giants at six, but even above that, you know, the Bears, if one of those receivers, if Adunze or Neighbors falls and you can go Caleb Williams and one of those two, that's the home run of all home runs. But I bring this up because you have Titans, Falcons, maybe going with some size up front there. Jets are 10. Bowers has been a landing spot, and it's kind of in that Brock Bowers range. But then pick 11 is the Vikings, and that's been the one team that there's been constant J.J. McCarthy noise around. My question for you would be, you know, they're sitting at 11, but do you think they'd have to trade up to actually get this guy, or could he conceivably fall there and they don't have to do anything?
I think they do. I think they have to move up, and you never take a chance on quarterbacks if you fall in love with one. And that's, if McCarthy's going to succeed anywhere, that is the situation he's going to succeed in. There's Kevin O'Connell's a great play caller. They've got Justin Jefferson. They've got a great offensive line, and he needs that compliment, at least to this point, from what we've seen, how he played in college, all the way up to what he's done in this draft process. And that's a perfect landing spot. But I really do think that if they need to move up to six, you know, jump the Giants and get up there and take him, you don't hesitate and you do it, because the Kirk era is done. And, you know, the general manager in Minnesota hasn't really made a stamp as far as picking his guy for the quarterback. And, you know, McCarthy makes a ton of sense there, obviously, as a Midwest kid, and could run that offense really well because of the pieces that are around him. versus the Giants, where it's a little bit more of a project where there's just not as many weapons. Play calling isn't quite the same. Really tough division. And it's the same thing, man. I mean, I don't mean to frame everything in the context of the division, but the Vikings look around and you look at the Packers and they look like they're pretty settled with Jordan Love. And you look at the Lions and what they did last year. And you look at the Bears loading up around Caleb Williams, and there might be pressure just to make a splash and get somebody to fit into that quarterback position because of what's surrounding them in the NFC North.
I don't know if he's the guy, but if he is and they're able to pull this off and the fourth quarterback in the draft ends up being one of the better ones, it's a huge steal. There is a scenario, though, because I see it both ways, right? You can trade up. There's the arms race. That's what ends up happening. But QBs have fallen. Justin Fields fell. Other names have fallen where, you know, Lamar Jackson was a late first-round pick as well. So we'll see. But honestly, I think that's what makes this so exciting. And thinking about what teams want to do. Do you have a read on Bowers? Do you think 10 at the Jets or a little higher, a little lower?
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that trips me up is marrying the positional value versus how rad he is and how fun he is to watch. I mean, the guy is so talented. You can plug him in line. You can plug him in the slot. You can plug him in outside. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare, but I think there's the shadow of Kyle Pitts and how that went a couple of years ago, and then just positional value in general, that the hit rates with tight ends recently has been kind of in that second to fourth round where a lot of those guys that are at the top of the league have come from. So I think absolutely he deserves talent-wise to go top 10, but it's figuring out what that actual value is for taking that position versus who he is. But, I mean, he fits perfect into that offense, man, and they're in the timeline where they're trying to maximize a year or two of Rodgers, and having Bowers make plays over the middle when you have Wilson on the outside is scary, and it would be fun to watch.
Can't wait to see how that top half of the draft shakes out here with Brennan Smith on the Money Mitch Effect, looking at some other positions, some other teams it might be targeting, and other position groups, Brennan. You know, Lyman was one that it seems like some years there's like a run. There's a very strong arms race at the lineman position. Maybe not as much this year. We know Alt and we know some other names, but how do you see the interior, the big boys up front, and some names that you might like at this year's draft?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first and foremost, it's Fatanu again, because I hate to just keep shouting out Huskies, but Washington just had it all, man, at every level last year. I think, looking at especially Taliese Fuaga from Oregon State, man, if anybody is like, just mean and nasty. He's the kind of right tackle who will just maul dudes for 60 minutes, and that's exactly what you want. So between those two guys, those are two of my favorites, not to just shout out the Pac-12. But, they've got talent that I think is going to be just a perfect fit for almost every team. And then, you know, looking later, there's some good tackles and there's some good guys that'll go probably at the 20 to 32 range, but everybody needs offensive linemen, and that's ultimately going to push some of those guys up that you might think would go to the second round, like Kingsley Suamatia and Patrick Paul, and just some of these offensive tackles that might be inflated a little bit just because of how scarce the position is on talent.
Yeah, it seems like they are as sure a thing when you can get those guys. And I'm with you on Fuaga, what he was at Oregon State. I mean, teams need linemen. We see it every year at the NFL on Sunday, that the line is the key to everything in a lot of ways. So I'm looking forward there. Another position I just wanted to get your thoughts on is the cornerback position, because there isn't a name that's a top 10 prospect, but there's a few that are kind of separating themselves from the pack. Including, and I got to point this out because we could see the first cornerback taken in the draft be from my Maxionland at Toledo, Quinnen Mitchell. So him as well as some others, are there any other corners that teams could use here?
Yeah, for sure. I think when you look at Mitchell, he's my favorite corner in this draft because he's so competitive. And there is something to be said about, you know, not to be like old school, but he had – plenty of offers and NIL offers to leave Toledo, and he stayed and just was dominant in a conference where, you know, it's a little bit lower competition level, but he still stood out on tape in every possible way to be one of the best corners in this class. Tarion Arnold, for sure, from Alabama. He might be the first off the board. But there's good talent throughout this, man. Like, one of the guys I really like is Kalen Carson. Mm-hmm. And he's probably going to go in those middle rounds. But there's a lot of talent to fit different schemes. Mike Sandersville from Michigan, he's kind of a nickel corner guy. But yeah, there's a lot of talent. And then Wiggins obviously blazed his 40 at the combine. And, you know, everybody wants speed. Everybody wants long speed. Everybody wants to be able to recover when those receivers run by you. Yeah. And there's some good talent. But give me Mitchell. He's the top of the class for me.
I also want to shout out some of the edge guys. I mean, I was surprised to see some of the mocks have Jared Verse outside the top 10. I get it, but I just think this dude's a stud. I think any team that ends up with Jared Verse is going to be very happy. Yeah, and there's a few others, too. I wanted to also mention some of the other players at the end. Chop Robinson, shout out to him from Penn State. Great name, by the way. But, you know, and that's what it is. I mean, there's going to be value in these drafts, including those positions, but also we see it with receiver every year. Some of the receivers, and maybe teams, Brennan, won't go receiver early because it just seems like second and third round is where you can hit a lot of, if not home runs, doubles and triples.
Right. Yeah. And that's the best thing and most fun thing about this draft, man, is like at the tail end of the first, all the way to probably the beginning of the third, there's so many different like skill sets and flavors and just personalities of receivers in this draft that you can get guys all the way to the top of the third round that are going to be impactful in your team. Wide receiver twos, high end wide receiver threes, and a couple wide receiver ones that are going to pan out. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at Ricky Pearsall, Ladd McConkey is one of my favorites because the guy, like, he's a little bit smaller than you'd want, but he just like embarrasses dudes. He's just so shifty. Mm-hmm. And then you look obviously a little further down and there's just guys that can make an impact. Malachi Corley obviously is kind of in that like Debo mold where you can run jet sweeps, which are so popular in the league now, and motion. But there's just a lot of good talent.
I actually think, you know, Brian Thomas is one I'm looking at because we've seen this before, right? Where you're the second best receiver on your own team, but you're basically your first round talent. So how does that work at the next level? I think he's, and I'm not trying to downgrade him at all, but as a slot guy, as a number three on a limited offense, he could be perfect. But again, we'll see, you know, where that ends up going. I want to ask you, though, about your Rams slotted at 19. Yeah. Could end a streak. Nice 8-year run of no draft picks in the first round. It could come to an end, but we're not sure. But what are you expecting the Rams to do at that 19 spot as it stands?
Yeah, Hart, Laiatu Latu, man, he's one of my favorite players in this draft. And obviously he's had the neck injuries that scare you a little bit, but the guy is the most complete pass rusher in this draft, I think by a mile. He's got multiple pass rush moves. He had the production at UCLA. He's talented. It's just a question of how long and what can go wrong with a pick like that and what his medicals shake out to be going into the draft. But my head says probably offensive line. They're just in a position where they need to start thinking about at tackle, especially what the next version of this team looks like with, you know, is Olufoshanu slip a little bit from Penn State, J.C. Latham kind of in that range where they might pick up a tackle of the future, Tyler Guyton. And then obviously like something – that the team's going to have to think about is when you lose Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Do you fill that spot in the first round with, I don't think Byron Murphy will be there at 19, but you know, Johnny Newton from Illinois. Or is that so much of a pit to fill that they start to reimagine the entire defense? So I would be kind of surprised if they took a defensive tackle. Like I said, I'd love to see Latu in horns, but my presumption is it's going to be a tackle.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I've seen the theories out there that if something happens with McCarthy, maybe the Rams get involved. It would take some fortune there. But I do think there's other options to go. And I know, I just want to let you mention it because we haven't talked since. Like, it sucks to have lost Aaron Donald, but what a thrill that must have been to root for him.
Oh, man. I just, like, can't reminisce enough about the dude. And he, it's so funny, like, speaking of the draft, when I think about that class, because at number two overall, the Rams picked Greg Robinson.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was in St. Louis when that happened. And the funniest thing is, no one remembers that it was a horrible second pick, but the steal of the draft.
They got him at 13, and the rest is history, man. And it's a gigantic loss for the Rams in the league that he's called it a day. But if anybody's earned the right to call it a day on his terms, it's him. It's just going to be interesting to see how the team pivots away from that. And it's been a pleasure to watch him. I think not just for me, but for everybody that's not a fan of an NFC West opposing team.
There is that.
So.
Yeah. Well, a couple more things before we wrap up the draft talk here. I wanted to ask you two quick hitters. One being, who's the first running back off the board? Because looking at the big board, it's like mid to late second round is where they're being valued, and we'll see. But, you know, it's basically, if you're looking on the gambling sites, it's basically a dead heat between Brooks and Blake Corum right now. But some other ones out there to maybe watch: Jalen Wright from Tennessee, Trey Benson from Florida State. But how do you see the running back market going here in draft 2024?
Yeah, man, I still think it's probably Jonathan Brooks. Even, you know, he's coming off the injury, but he's kind of the guy that has the athleticism. He can, you know, put his head down and get extra yards. He can make it to that second level. Corum, obviously, just touchdown machine, and I think he benefited from that offense a little bit, but he was also just a wrecking ball. I think he's got some good potential to be the first one, but it's just another part of this overall, like, devaluation of running backs. You know, it's wild to, even last year we had a ton of talent in the first round, and a couple of guys went, even though the position's devalued. And then we might be sitting through the middle of the second round or even the end of the second round and not hear a running back called. So it's just a sign of the times. It's strange. And there's a lot of different, again, flavors with running backs in this draft. But the complete package, I think it comes down to Corum, just with his physicality, and then, Jonathan Brooks.
Going to be fascinating. Last one is other quarterbacks. Is there anybody else outside of those big four? You know, Penix, Bo Nix, anybody else that maybe, and I know the odds are slim, but could be the true sleeper in this draft?
And I'm glad you asked me that, because I'm like Spencer Rattler pilled. Like, I think.
Oh, wow. Man, I thought we were doing so well.
I don't know why. Like, I just, like, maybe because he's a Zona guy, I don't know. But just, like, he's got the arm talent. He's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, like, how he interviews and stuff. But in terms of, like, guys who have a little bit of extra upside that you might get to snag in the third or fourth round and then be developmental in a way that they can be a top 17 quarterback in the league eventually, I think he's got the tools, because when you look around after – kind of the Penix Nix line, it's just a little lean. I mean, there's guys with skills, but there's not a full package of developmental skills that you're going to find outside of somebody like him.
Yeah, I see him being worth a flyer. And this is so much true even at the top, but more so at the bottom, right? The situation. Can he go to a place that's going to foster development? Not play him early, really, you know, get some good working habits. And it's going to be on him, right, Brennan? It's going to be on Rattler to buy in and be a true professional. But I understand what there is to like, because he has all the tools. That's why he was so highly touted coming into college. And we'll see. Well,
I was just going to, you know, the parting thought is with quarterback, the 2021 draft now of the four or five guys that went. Trevor Lawrence is the only guy who's with his team. And he went 1-1.
And so we all thought that class was loaded. We're all like, man, 80%. It's every year. It's like all these guys are good. How could any of them be a bust? And then it's one or two that stick. It's the truth.
It's just the forever axiom of the NFL draft is it's not just about talent. It's so much about circumstance and situation and coaching and everything else that, you know, when we look back at this in a few years and see how these guys have done, there's a billion factors that go into them being successful, and more likely than not, it's going to be one or two out of the five between May, Daniels, Williams, Penix, and Nix, and it's going to be fascinating to see where they land and how they pan out, because as always, this is an inexact science, and it takes a lot to get a guy to be impactful, and it takes a lot more than that to get him to be transcendent.
Yeah. It's a crapshoot in a lot of ways, but there's people that put a lot of time into this and know what they're doing, but you'll never 100% know. It's, you know, when are you, it's like, when are you 100% sure on any purchase or any big decision? You're never 100% sure.
Just want to throw darts, man, like everything else. So,
all right. Well, hey, before I let you go, this was fun talking draft. We talk about this being the best time. I mean, the NBA last night was out of control with both the Knicks Sixers ending, which, colossal. Really, like, it's funny how you can look at this, right? These are exciting moments, and I'm impartial, don't really have a dog in the fight at all. You can look at it like, wow, insane, what a moment, blah blah blah, but then you can also be like, the choke jobs by the Sixers and Lakers last night, truly remarkable.
It's a, you know, the speaking of Denver, the altitude is undefeated, and you could just tell, man, like, there was kind of a switch in the late third, early fourth where it was getting to him.
What's that, 11 straight, though, or 10 straight? Like, I know it's, like, altitude, and it's close, but, like, at a certain point, like, you play the percentages. That's always happens when they play, is that the Lakers will get out to a good start. LeBron and AD will be going good, and there'll be a third player. Last night it was Russell. But eventually the Nuggets are that good. They just wear you down and find a way. And Murray couldn't hit anything in the first three quarters, couldn't miss in the fourth.
Right. Exactly. And that's the value of, I think – like, home court advantage is overrated in the NBA. These guys play 41 nights away and 41 nights home during the regular season. I don't think it matters as much. It's obviously a factor, but you can tell it's like the meme that, like, the power of friendship overcomes things. But, like, you can tell, man, with the Nuggets, they, like, they're a well-oiled machine. They've been together for a while. That core is, you know, they can read each other's minds, and that pick and roll between Jokic and Murray is nasty, and it's just that's the name of the game. And it's they're going to be really, really hard to beat until maybe they run into the Celtics or
money,
one of these other West teams.
And then money will be the issue where they have to figure out deals and stuff. Now it's crazy. I would say too, like, especially this playoff time, hockey and basketball, home ice doesn't mean as much. You know, baseball, you get last ups, and football, it's the elements, so it's a little more important. With how great the NHL was, too, last night, and I have to mention, I mean, you're in Utah. What's the vibe like for the new Salt Lake City? Going to be a Utah name, but Salt Lake getting a pro NHL team. What's the vibe in the city with all those new season ticket holders?
Man, you can feel it. Like, it's validation for where this city and where this state is going. I mean, you know, I was a kid here, and then I grew up in Tucson and went to school in Phoenix. But compared to 20 years ago versus, like, the palpable excitement for this, because it's validation, man. It's validation for the fans in this city and how often they sell out the Jazz and how much winter sport is loved here and how much they'll treasure having another professional franchise like that. And you can feel it. And obviously, you know, it's tough that it's at the expense of another team, and you never want to see that in sports. It's not something that I want, but at the same time, there will be a soft landing here. There will be a ton of support. People will love this team. And you can already see that they're behind it with all the season ticket requests, deposits. And, you know, I think it's going to be fun, man. It's they're going to embrace this team, and it's going to be a blast to see how it's built and how they fit into this market.
Yeah, Ryan Smith doing that great work, and also making sure the owner, the Jazz, now the hockey team, saying, you know, we want this. He was on the ground floor, and it got to a point where the NHL, and I'm with you, you know, awful for Phoenix. I mean, I lived through a relocation as a young kid, so I know how it is. I think with expansion, there will be a hockey team in Arizona in the near future because they want to add a couple more teams, and it's all about the ownership and it's all about the land deal, and Utah doesn't have that issue, obviously. But that being said, Brennan, they were going to go to Salt Lake, whether it was relocation or expansion, because of how possessed Ryan Smith was, the fever pitch for the Utah's, you know, the citizens to have this hockey team, to have another sports team. And it's really cool to see passion and really growing a market. I remember when they started playing exhibition games there, you know, and they hadn't been doing it in a while, but these Kings exhibition games, these LA Kings games they've been playing out there, you've been to a few of them, how just rabid it is for a preseason game. And it's like, okay, the market's there.
And that's, that, you know, at my day job, man, that's like, we, it's a joke, but it's not a joke. The three times we cancel like our youth practices for hockey is Christmas, Thanksgiving, and whenever the Frozen Fury preseason game is, because every kid goes. And this is a place that's passionate about hockey. And it has been, like, it's not a reinvention of the wheel. The Salt Lake Golden Eagles were beloved prior to when the Jazz arrived. And then, you know, NBA fever kind of just slowly took over. But this city, this region, this state has a proud hockey history, and this is going to be just an awesome chapter to have this, whatever the new name is going to be here in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, what can we get, like Blizzard, or, you know, I don't know. I saw like Yeti is one, but we'll see.
Yeah, it sounds like Ryan's going to do a bracket, so we'll see how it shakes out.
But. Yes, yeah, something wintery would be good. But yeah, just to also say too, I mean, you know, again, condolences to Arizona and everything. I'm bringing this up because there are a lot of players in the NHL right now. Austin Matthews is the best goal scorer in the world. He's from Arizona. Tage Thompson was born there. Matthew Nyes is on the Leafs right now. These were Arizona locals that grew up with an NHL put team in town.
Right.
That is going to work wonders. There will be Salt Lake City born players, born young men in the NHL in the next 20, 25 years. It's going to be very special.
Exactly. You can't understate the trickle down and the impact that that's going to have on kids in this state who, you know, there's thousands of kids who play junior jazz right now, but then imagine that with a hockey team and the pride that that's going to bring. And yeah, man, that's always the goal, is, you know, you're looking ahead 10, 15, 20 years, and you have kids that have started in programs in Salt Lake playing at the highest level. And this is going to galvanize and promote that.
Awesome. Can't wait to see next year's squad as it stands right now, the unnamed Utah hockey team. But we got a lot of hockey this year, a lot of basketball, and the NFL draft. Brennan Smith, always a pleasure talking sports with you. Enjoy the NFL draft, and thanks for coming on the Money Mitch Effect.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
That was Brennan Smith on the Money Mitch Effect. We're on all your podcast platforms, SoundCloud, Apple, Google, wherever you get your podcast. Check me out on Twitter, MoneyMitchM21, and check out the Money Mitch Effect Facebook page. We're back next week. More sports to talk, recapping the draft, more NHL and NBA playoffs, whatever else the world of sports holds for us. For Brennan Smith, I'm Mitch Michaels. This was the Money Mitch Effect. Thanks for listening. Keep enjoying sports.